Well, welcome to the strategic penetration testing presentation here at Nauticon. And I have to say, this year at Nauticon, I like it a lot better. I like the facilities, the movement. Has everybody here been to Nauticon a few times? I like this place better. Nice job, guys. Seriously. About me, I'm the creator of the Social Engineer Toolkit. So if anybody's ever used the Social Engineer Toolkit, we'll be showing a couple of demos for it. I'm on the Backtrack development team, the Exploit DV development team. One of the founders of DerbyCon. We also have another one here, and Adrian, you in here? Adrian back there. We've got all three of them here. DerbyCon, if you haven't checked it out, take a peek. It's going to be a pretty awesome conference. I have a new book coming out with co-authored with Mutz from Backtrack and Dookie from the Exploit DB team and Jim O'Gorman. And it's Metasploit, a Penetration Tester's Guide. It should be out next month. I'm an exploit writer and a penetration tester. I'm director of information security at a Fortune 1000 company. And I'm in charge of the entire information security team. And I give a lot of hugs. So for those of you that don't know me, I'm a hugger. Only guys, though. I fist bump with women. It was like one of those things that I agree to with my wife. So let's talk about penetration testing today. Penetration today it kind of looks like this, right? A little bit of a Ponzi scheme, a train wreck, money, nuclear explosion. It's kind of all over the place. And this isn't a doom and gloom on penetration testing or saying that we're doing it all wrong. Because, you know, a lot of us are doing it right, and we're doing it as best as we possibly can with the resources that we have available to us. But there needs to be a fundamental shift, and I'll be talking about that a little bit. And I'm not judging. My wife watches it all the time, so I had to throw that in there. But we can't deny the truth. In 2008, and these are great statistics from privacyrights.org, and they keep track of all of the publicly reported data breaches per each year, and it goes back to 2005. And if you look at just 2008 and above, I didn't want to go through each one, but if you look at 2008, there was a total of 354 reported public data breaches, at least that they have in their database, right? And so RBS WorldPay was one of them, which was like 1.1 million social security numbers and, you know, a bunch of other stuff, right? In 2007, I think it was TJ Maxx, and, you know, we had all these breaches happening. In 2009, there was 252. Reported data breaches. So if you go back from 2008 to 2009, we looked a little bit better, right? We had about 100 less reported public data breaches. Well, unfortunately, they were the largest reported public data breaches in history. The largest amount of records disclosed, largest amount of person identifiable information, so our social security numbers and all that good stuff, public healthcare information, PCI data, everything, right? So it was our largest breach in history that we've ever experienced. In 2010, we spent an estimated 34% more in information security. So our budgets went up, our staffing increased, at least for some of us. And as a whole, our security budgets increased. We should have gotten better. Well, in 2010, there was 594 reported public data breaches, over double of that of last year, right? So something happened. So, wait, did I? Yeah, never mind. Two clicks, that was weird. So we continue to get breached more. And more, and more. And did you see how they got breached? Anybody know?
An SQL attack.
Blind SQL injection on MySQL. Seriously.
I thought it was a joke too.
I thought it was an April Fool's thing. And more. WordPress recently got breached significantly. US Airways, Epsilon, obviously we've been hearing a lot about that. And you guys get the idea. We've had 160 reported public data breaches this year so far. So we're on track for about last year, if not a little bit worse. And I bet the majority of these companies had penetration tests done. I guarantee you RSA had a number of penetration tests performed. They have security injected into their software development lifecycle. I'm sure that they have robust and mature information security programs. I'm sure they have consultants come in that check their security to make sure that they're good, right? And they got hit with spear phishing in a flash zero day, right? And they didn't detect it until they had compromised several components of their network. MySQL gets hit with blind SQL injection. I mean, come on. That's like, anyways. So most of these companies probably have dedicated security personnel. I would think RSA probably has dedicated security personnel, right? They probably have a CSO. You know, they probably have multiple people dedicated to monitoring their infrastructure. You know, they probably have a SIM. They probably have data loss prevention. They probably have all these components that make up what we consider today a secure information security program, right? We all do. So why are we doing so bad? And again, I'm not saying bad as in we're all failing, we're doing horrible. I mean, you know, we're doing good when it comes to an immature industry. And I'm not saying penetration testing is the savior. But I'm very penetration testing focused, so I'm going to be talking a lot about that. And I'm not saying everything's bad, again. What I'm saying is we could be doing so much better. And I don't know if you saw that, but you fail at failing, there's a blue screen of death on there, and in the front of it, it says the blue screen of death caught an exception, so we have to close the blue screen of death. It's pretty cool. We need change. Penetration testing focuses on our riskiest, or penetration tests needs to really focus on our riskiest business areas of business. We need to be aimed at stealing and learning the stealing information and learning the organization. Right now, you know, and I'm just as guilty. You know, when I started off in penetration testing, the first thing I wanted to do was get domain admin, right? And pop a whole bunch of boxes and extract all the usernames and passwords off of it and show the company how bad I owned them. And they have no idea what I just did. You know, even though I used a zero-day or, you know, I broke in through 10 different ways, I got in through SQL injection, and it was like the most craziest hack that I've ever done. They don't care. They have no idea what that means. And one thing that I also noticed too is penetration testers, what, as consultants or even in corporate environments, how long do we generally have for a penetration test? Does anybody know? Ah, crap. Hang on. So how do you guys anybody know? And you can't answer, no. Generally, how long do we have on a penetration test? A week or two. We've commoditized penetration testing to a week or two, right? So we have a week to learn the organization, how they make money, how they do business, what their riskiest areas are, and we rely off of a company to tell us that, assuming that they know it. We need to move away from this, the castle mentality. We have this technology in place that protects us against our DMZs, right? Our most protected and highly sensitive systems because they're internet facing. We have to move away from not understanding what we're doing. I mean, the traditional model of the firewall and the DMZs and everything else is slowly fading away because of the users, right? This is actually true, by the way. What's larger, the moon or an elephant? Elephants are definitely larger. We need to move to this. That's all I got for my slides. No, okay. My favorite is risk equations. And I'm just going to pick on risk equations. We need to move away from risk formulas and auditors. Away from crazy complexity to reality. It does suck, right? It does suck. We've taken security, and again, I say we, you know, loosely, and a lot of us see it. We've made security so complex that not any of us can understand it. You know, we hire the Big Five, and the Big Five come in, and they, you know, we spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on this awesome information enterprise risk management program that's going to solve all of our issues as a company. Once we implement this, we are never going to be breached again, right? I have not seen a company that has effectively implemented that high-pie $500,000 assessment that that company invested in ever. Can anybody say that they've implemented a Fortune 5's plan for information security? Because I'll be testing at the end. So, anybody? No? So we just had a risk assessment. They found our riskiest security areas and our largest exposures as a company because the two-week risk assessment understands every avenue of our business. We implement controls, compensating controls. The auditor checks them and agrees we are good. We've reduced our risk. We are less riskier of being attacked and compromised by hackers, right? So the reality is, let me ask a question. Do you know how many how a hacker is going to break into your company? You guys know? You never know. How is that reducing our risk? I mean, I don't know when some dude in China, probably the Chinese government, at 3 a.m., is going to compromise on a Thursday my systems, or how long they've been going at it. You know, are they going to go in through an application vulnerability? Are they going to go in through social engineering? Are they going to go in through a buffer overflow? Are they going to go in through a zero day? We really have no idea. Scenario B. You have a penetration test performed. We had a wireless, internal, external web application testing. We're good. Unfortunately, we have these guys and girls, right? Where does it equate to in that? So what I want to talk to you about is strategic penetration testing and really where we kind of need to mature as an industry. And there's a lot more smarter people in this room than me, believe me. And I think if we all come together and put our heads together, we can fix it. And I'll be talking about how to fix penetration testing in specific. But really aimed at targeting companies' ability to generate revenue. Because believe it or not, guys, you know, when you put in a million-dollar appliance or those different types of things, you're trying to protect the company from losing money. That's the only thing a company cares about. They don't care about security. In fact, it's a necessary evil for them because they need to stay operating and doing business. But in most cases, the only thing that they want to do is make money. If the company doesn't make money, you're not going to have a job. So that's why a few of us came together and we created the penetration testing execution standard. And has anybody here heard of that yet? Great. It's aimed at tackling weaknesses that we have right now in the industry. And I'll give a little bit of a brief history on how it started. Oops. But really we're focusing on identifying what we need to accomplish during a penetration test. And that's really identifying the riskiest areas and the areas that could potentially impact our business in a negative way to generate revenue. And what I like about this standard and what we're trying to accomplish with it is it gives a clear path to mature your information security program. So, you know, the problem with penetration tests, and again, it's not a problem, it's, you know, whatever we look at it, is we don't have a clear understanding of where we are right now and where we need to go in order to mature our programs to be able to withstand different types of attacks, or even if we want to. So, brief history, that's Chris Nickerson, Mr. Mustache. And Chris, myself, and FTAC, and a bunch of other guys, we all got together at ShmooCon. We've been talking about, Chris and I were talking about this for a long time, I mean, months and months and months. And the funny story was, the room here that we're in, we're at ShmooCon, and he goes up and he's like, hey, I was wondering if I can get a room, you know, for, you know, like just like 2 hours just to sit down and talk. And like, well, that's going to be like, you know, $2,000 or something like that. And Chris is like, all right, never mind. And so we just go to this room, and we're sitting there having our conversations and everything, and someone comes in, and we're like, there's no water. And so they went and brought us water and everything, and so, good old Chris fashion. But we all got together as an industry, and these are people internationally. These are people from around the world. Guys a lot smarter than me. And we really tried to focus on what it was that we needed to do in order to fix the problems that we have. And the reason why this is different is we know what we need to do in order to fix the industry as itself. I mean, at least we have a good idea of what that is. And collectively, with everybody working together on it, we can definitely fix it and see what's coming in the future. And I mean, that's important to say is collectively. Since that meeting that we had, you know, at ShmooCon a few months ago, I think we have like 70 people contributing to the pen testing execution standard. I mean, that's huge. I mean, there's obviously an appetite to come up with something that's going to at least define what a penetration test is instead of the smash and grab vulnerability assessments that we're seeing today. And again, I want to emphasize on a maturity model. Not every company is ready for each level of a penetration test. Some of them require basic levels of attacks and trying to, you know, at least start to bolster their information security program and at least bring awareness. But what's awesome about the penetration testing execution standard, this is, we're still defining all the levels and everything. There's different levels. So let's just say if we end up calling it level one. Level one might be your most basic of a penetration test, right? So we go and we try to get in through SQL injection or those different types of things. We probably do it overtly so we can, you know, teach the staff on how we're doing it, what we're able to do. Level two might start to get a little more sophisticated. We do it covertly. Try to gauge the incident response program, how their level of appetite is for detecting us or when they actually go forward and detect us. Level three would be more so on the very targeted attacks, you know, going after the company's intellectual property and sensitive data, and you should be doing that level one and two, but more so advanced. And say level four is, you know, zero-day research and, you know, trying to see if someone were to target your individual organization, how far they would get. So here's the methodologies. And this is why it's important to understand that regardless of what level you're in, these methodologies hold true to each individual one. And the first and one of the most important aspects is going to be the pre-engagement interaction. What is the company's appetite for security? Where are they at? And where do they need to go? And for me, I'm not in the consulting role anymore. I'm in a, you know, a director position, I guess, in a Fortune 1000 company. And I can honestly say that I don't know every single line of business that we do that generates revenue. I mean, we're in 77 countries. We do everything from, you know, different types of services to software development to selling actual products. I have no idea. I mean, I have a good understanding of the major ones that make us money, but I have no idea on the little ones. And then you're going to see an evolution in that. I kind of skipped ahead there. But finding out what they're going to do and what they want to get out of it, and really it's an education process. Intelligence gathering is the number two most important one, right? And that's really learning what the organization is actually doing. You know, how do they, what's their presence on the internet? How do they make business? What is their language? And really trying to find out what your attack vector is going to be. Really learning the organization how you do it. Finding what you're going to be able to do. Threat modeling, what's our best route to get into the organization? I mean, what are the keys to the kingdom? Are they trade secrets? Is it customer data? Is it the brand? You know, for me, I was like the brand destruction model, where I can go into a company and completely destroy their brand. And Chris uses the example of hacking into a, you know, like a company that produces aspirin and changing their formula to cyanide. You know, people start dying. No one's going to ever touch that brand ever again, right? That would definitely detriment that company to where they would never be able to recoup their losses ever again. Vulnerability analysis. No, I was going to say vulnerability scanning. In no part of this is there any vulnerability scanning. And, you know, let me rephrase that. At the very end, maybe, so you didn't miss anything. But moving to more of the attacks where you can actually attack as a hacker. Understanding that vulnerabilities are present and doing your research. Now, maybe it's social engineering. That's where I get into my demo. Because that wouldn't be a talk if I wrote the social engineer toolkit. I didn't show the social engineer toolkit itself. And so for me, you know, we've done our penetration test for the past few years. We get outside companies that come in and test our security, right? And we find some really close ones that work with us and understand this model to actually come through and do our penetration test. But we find that the users are where our most, you know, riskiest area are. And I think you've been hearing that a lot. I'm checking for updates. I'm going to skip that. Our users are the most riskiest area. And so I developed the social engineer toolkit. Has anybody not used the social engineer toolkit before? Don't be shy. Cool. So I developed SET about 2 years ago. Has anybody ever listened to the Social Engineer podcast or social-engineer.org as the social engineering framework? A bunch of guys, Chris Hanegi and a few of us, Jim O'Gorman, got together and we're sitting in an IRC chat room. Like, man, there's really no formalized way to perform social engineering as penetration testers. And that was a huge emphasis for us 2 years ago because we saw the industry shifting that way. And if you look at the evolution of how attacks were occurring, you know, it really started off with the social engineering aspect, right? You had Mitnick back in the days, you know, casing the FBI, and social engineering and black boxing and all that different types of things were insanely popular early on. And as computers became more prevalent, we moved to the network and operating system layer. So you had your slammers, you know, those different types of areas. So we started incorporating firewalls and DMZs. Well, then Web 2.0 came out, and we put all of our information up on web applications, and then hackers moved to web applications, right? Not missing anything here? Well, then web applications started getting better. We injected security into our software development lifecycle. We have web application firewalls, you know, all these different things. So it became more challenging to get into web applications. So then we moved to the clients, the users. And you saw a slew of bugs for Internet Explorer and Firefox and Adobe still. It's going to be for another few more years, probably. And did you actually hear there was a party at DEF CON for this? You can get into the party if you had an Adobe Zero Day. So they had enough people for a party for Adobe Zero Days. One of the guys, I remember seeing one of the guys' Twitter was like, man, I just dropped 5 Adobe Zero Days and not one person tweeted me or made any type of news whatsoever. He's like, I don't even know what I was even spending my time on with this. So you saw the shift focus really on the user population, going back to really the traditional roots of social engineering and targeting the users, you know, and why not? They're the ones that don't have a large amount of exposure to these types of attacks or even be able to recognize it. So when we were in this chat room, I was like, man, it'd be cool if we can come up with a tool that helps, you know, organizations test how well their user awareness program is going to work. You know, how effective are their controls going to be on, you know, their users or what they have in the different areas of inspecting to see if a social engineering attack would be successful. So I created SET. And SET is a menu-driven tool. It also has a web interface. But it's got a ton of different attack vectors in it. So you have your spear phishing, the website attack, infectious media, which it'll create like a USB or DVD for you, mass mailers. The cool one we did last year, a buddy of mine at work, Josh Kelly, we released a Tinty USB hit attack, and Iron Geek did just an amazing job with all the research on it, so we just wrote a whole bunch of exploit code for it. And it was actually a funny story is we like to have a lot of fun and joke around in our offices. And so there's this one guy that's in the database security team. And we soldered a Tinty device, which is a small microchip, microprocessor, into the keyboard. And the Tinty device gets picked up as a USB hit device or a keyboard. So when you plug it in, it acts in every way like a keyboard. And so we diverted them, and you know, we replaced the keyboard with a bad one, exactly the same model, brand, everything else that he had. And all it would do is move his mouse up a whole bunch and to the left and then right click. And it would do it like every 30 seconds. And so it was a precursor to hit our CSO, which we thought would be really funny and unique. And So, you know, we're giggling the first day and everything's going by, and he's, you know, getting a little frustrated with it, and I'm laughing, and I had to go on a business trip, so I was gone for the rest of the week. And I figured, hey, you know, if it got out of control, Josh would let him know that, hey, something's probably up, or replace it so that he doesn't know anything's up. Well, I get back, and Josh hasn't told him anything. He had replaced his mouse, he had replaced his docking station, and he had replaced his computer. Everything but the keyboard. And so there was like 30 help desk tickets open, and all of a sudden I'm like, oh, man. So, you know, I like Josh. I'm like, listen, dude, I'll divert him. You swap the keyboard back out. So we divert him. He still doesn't know to this day. So everything just magically started working. But a really cool attack vector. You know, you plug it into a computer, and it acts as a keyboard, and it bypasses any type of auto-run type of capabilities that you have in place, and it allows you to really compromise the computer, any type of payload you want to. SMS spoofing, spoof SMS number. The new one I just added in the new version 1.3 is the wireless access point attack vector. So it'll create an access point of your computer with whatever you want it to be, and then they associate to you to try to go to Google or whatever, and it starts attacking their computer via like the Java Apple attack, which I'll show in a second, or credential harvesting, trying to steal their usernames and passwords, but a bunch of different types of attacks. What I'm going to show you is the website attack vector, and specifically the Java applet. And for me, I don't generally use exploits anymore during a pen test. I've kind of gone past that. You know, I have the ability to research 0 days, and I'll show you one later that I researched in just for having fun. And I have the ability to do that, but I find that there's a larger success rate with things that are legitimately, you know, fine in every type of patch level. And so every user has Java installed, every single one, at least in 99% of the companies that I did assessments on, and at my organization, we do. And this doesn't actually exploit a bug in Java. It's a legitimate applet that runs just as Java was intended. So regardless of patch level or different ways that they were installed, you're going to be able to be successful in this. And so we're going to select the website attack vector. And SIT has a bunch of different types of attacks. We have tab nabbing. Is everybody familiar with tab nabbing? If you're browsing one site, it'll say, please wait while this site loads. Someone switches to a different tab, and then the JavaScript detects that the tab was switched and replaces it with a different website. So like, for example, Gmail. And like, oh, I must have been logged out on my Gmail. They type their username and password in, and it steals their credentials over. The webjacking attack's kind of neat, where it clones a website, and it'll say this site is moved. And you hover over the link, and it shows the website legitimately in the bottom URL. So anybody that, you know, thought it might be a malicious site, you see a legitimate URL, you click on it, and it redirects you to a bad website that steals all your credentials. The credential harvesters for stealing usernames and passwords. So you clone a company VPN website, or you clone, you know, an OWA instance, will sit there and harvest all of the credentials itself. And what I like to do is, when I'm doing a penetration test, especially with social engineering, is I'll register a DNS name that's similar in nature to the organization I'm attacking. So I might replace it with like a 1 for an L, or, you know, different ways, and then you just change your font when you send an email out, or if you call them on the phone, or different types of ways of getting them to use it. But I'm going to specifically be using the Java applet attack. And what SET will do is it will automatically go to a website, rip down that page, and clone it and do a bunch of stuff to it, rewrite it so that it's got all the malicious code in it, and then it'll set up a web server so that when they connect to it, they're attacked. And so we'll click on the site cloner. And I'll just clone Gmail as an example. And the internet connection here is like so slow, so it's going to take like 10 minutes. There we go. And SET has a bunch of payloads embedded into it. So you can use your standard interpreter, reverse shells, different things that are already embedded into the Metasploit framework, right? But I also, in the latest version 1.3, I spent about 4 months of development writing my own custom interactive shell that is pretty well done from the fact that all communications back and forth are AES encrypted. It does a randomized cipher key exchange per each instance, so every time that you're connecting back to the attacker machine, it's going to negotiate a brand new key so that each communication is unique and independent in its nature. And really what it's designed to do is, from a post-exploitation perspective, make your life a little bit easier. Now, RADI is really cool. Who here filters outbound access on their company? Who here inspects HTTP? This bypasses it. What RADI does is it injects into a running instance of iExplorer or Firefox, and it will actually piggyback the communications via HTTP and the proxy settings to communicate back with the attacker. And it's done purely in an HTTP fashion. So all the communications back and forth are done via HTTP, so if any type of packet inspection is on, it's not going to catch it. And even better, the communications back and forth are blowfish encrypted. So kind of interesting. But I'll be showing the the interactive command shell. And so it's got everything loaded. It cloned the website. It set up a web server. It's got the crypto libraries loaded. AES is supported, so AES 256. And we're ready to go. Now, on the victim's machine, this is a Windows 7 fully patched machine. So it's got Service Pack 1. I think it's running IE9 and everything else. And what's important with this is it's so trivial to get a user to click on, you know, a website or go to a specific site or send them an email and have them click on a website, because we have a very, you know, large tendency to sit there and click on things that we don't necessarily know what they are. And one of my favorite ones is I'll go to LinkedIn and I'll look at any new, you know, associate or employee that's hired to the company, because those guys are like ripe for the picking. I mean, they have no idea who, you know, a VP in the company is. They have no idea who, you know, anybody of power is within that organization. They're brand new. And it's unfortunate, but they're brand new and they're the best targets to go for. And what I'll generally do is I'll find that person and I'll sit there and I'll, you know, ping the local directory. I'll sit there and try to find them and find out what the phone number is. And then I'll just download, you know, in like an app, like spoof app, or use my own Asterisk server, and I'll spoof my phone number to make it look like I'm coming from inside of the company. So I'm coming from a legitimate company name or a company phone number, and I call this person up. And the best is if they're in the help desk. Like help desk, no offense to any help desk, but you rotate out and in very quickly. I mean, especially like the lower level help desk guys, they find a new job that pays, you know, $5,000 more, they're moving. So you can generally find a new, you know, relatively within the past 6 months, someone new in the help desk to target. And those guys are great. So you call up the help desk and you say, hey, you know, I'm so-and-so, I'm a VP, I need your help so bad. I'm like, I have a $2 million proposal out on the table that I need to get done right now, and I can't get to the sales site to get the information that I need. Can you go to and just check to see if you can get to it and see if it's something with my problem? And listen, I really appreciate your help. I'm going to tell your boss that you're doing an awesome job. So before the person even talks, he already knows I'm a person of authority. He knows that, you know, I've already built rapport with him because I'm somewhere higher than him, and he's going to pretty much do whatever I need him to do because he doesn't want to disappoint me, because as humans, we are very much on the keen of liking the people above us. So we go to our website. So I guess it is IE8. Works with IE9. And I go to this website, and it looks every way, shape, or form to Gmail. So he clicks run, and everything looks fine. Now, it actually, once he actually clicked run, if you notice, he went back to the legitimate Google site. So he never even knew he was at a bad site at that time. And you can have the publisher be signed by anybody. That's the way Java apps work. If you haven't signed by Microsoft, Google, or whomever, or if you want to be really cool with it, you can sign up a legitimate publisher signature through, I think it's like $200. So $200 gets you a legitimately signed applet, and you can just make it whatever company name you want to. And so say you clone this sales site or you clone the company that you're targeting's website, the person's going to get redirected back to it, sees a legitimate site, everything's perfect, right? And so, you know, the guy in the help desk is like, oh, it looks fine to me, it's working perfectly fine, he has, you know, no idea anything's going wrong. And, you know, me on the other end, like, oh man, it's working for me too, I don't know what you did, but thank you, I'm going to tell your boss that you just did an awesome job. Click. He's good. Whereas on the other side, we get a shell. And what I've been working on with this is the ability to do a lot of cool functions within the interactive shell. And it's multi-threaded, so if you get 50 shells back, you'll have them all listed here in numerical order. And you drop into it, and you're in the set shell. And so you have a bunch of different options here. We got drop into command prompt, you know, type in your commands and everything. Now, does anybody know with Windows 7 something that they implemented? A protection mechanism that they implemented for users that clicked on things a lot. UAC. So me as an attacker, if I go to add a user, I get access is denied. It does not allow me to actively compromise this machine. So back in, it was New Year's Eve actually, I was working with Kevin Mitnick. Kevin Mitnick was on a pen test, and he called me up and he's like, listen, I can't get in this machine because everybody there has got Windows 7, they're fully patched, they have, you know, a bunch of different protection mechanisms in place, and they have UAC and I can't get past it. And so 4 days it took me and him together, 4 days it took me to write a bypass for UAC. And so what it does is as a normal user, it injects into explorer.exe because explorer.exe runs under the context of that user account. And it executes commands under the pretext of a UAC safe or UAC safe process because it's signed by a trusted publisher certificate through Microsoft. So essentially, you can run commands with a USCCA flag under the export.exe. So all I do is I upload another shell, spawn another shell under the export.exe process with the trusted publisher certificate underneath that, and then bada bing, bada boom, I have a shell. So I built that into set. It works for 64 and x86. I didn't do my standard like crazy coding before the talk, so it should work. So we get a second connection received. And we drop in, we see that we have a UAC safe base shell. And drop in a command prompt. And we get around it.
Yay.
And conversely, we could also do elevation of privileges to system as well. I built that in. So you can grab system as well and elevate yourself to be able to do username and password hash dumping. So it works both ways. So we see we have another shell running a system. Now, one cool feature that I added recently was the SSH tunneling capability. So you can tunnel your communications over the interactive shell via SSH back to the attacker machine. So one of the biggest challenges when you're doing a pen test is, you know, hey, I want to be able to RDP to this machine, or I want to be able to connect to other ports. So I also built SSH tunneling in. Let me make sure my password is what I think it is. And so all we're going to do is tell set to pipe all the communications back via SSH. Back to our attacker machine on port 22. It can be whatever port you want to. We're going to tunnel 3389 over, and it needs the username and password. And then we're going to tunnel 3389 back to my attacker machine. And so it should have tunneled. And then we can do whatever we need to on that internal network that we want ourselves. So again, in a NAT situation or firewall, you'd be able to get in. It's also got features like add a local admin, so local admin syntax, domain admin syntax. One of my favorite ones is keystroke logging. So in here, I can type in whatever I want to. And then over here, I can just do a dump of it. Well, generally it works. No. And then you can also do things like lock the workstation, which also isn't working. It's weird. Oh, it's because I'm running a system right now. Hang on. I'm not running as a user anymore. It should. Hey, you're running a system. There we go. And then we can do lock workstation. Locks the person's machine. We can capture the keystrokes that way too, right? It's a lot of cool features. I'll be adding cache dumping and hash dumping here soon. I'm almost done with the code. It's just going through and the encryption stuff that you have to do with it. It's ridiculous, so it just takes time. I'm about 80% done with that. And then what I'm also working on too is process injection so that it can migrate to any process you want to. So using the process write memory Windows 32 API function call. And it'll inject into a running process, so I can run under export.exe's memory space and not have to trip anything that if you look in the task manager, those different types. But again, a lot of different types of attacks that you can use within the social engineer toolkit. So like, for example, I could do the credential harvester. Come on, Nauticon. There we go. And they go to the credential harvester. And I social engineer someone. And the best way that I've seen this work is using a VPN concentrator or OWA to capture credentials. But again, they go back to our website. It's normal stuff. We type in username and password. And it goes through and it actually captures the credentials for you as well automatically. So again, it'll rewrite the program on the fly, all the post parameters and everything, so that you can intercept them and harvest them. And then again, it's going to redirect them back to the legitimate site. so they're not going to know that they're at a bad site itself. Cool stuff. So I don't know what that had to do with strategic pen testing, but I just want to show it off. The exploitation stuff. For me, again, going back to when I started off in the penetration testing field, exploitation to me was key. I needed to exploit every single system that I possibly could. It was sometimes loud and noisy. I wouldn't really matter about what I tripped. Exploitation really needs to be a precision strike, something that you know is going to be successful in that organization, because that's how a hacker is going to do it, right? And when I say that's how a hacker is going to do it, I don't know if the hacker is going to do it that way specifically, but in most cases, that's how you see a hacker do it, right? So really, a precision strike to actually go in, infiltrate the organization without them being able to detect you, and confidence on what's going to actually be successful, not a brute force method. Post-exploitation are arguably equally as important as intelligence gathering. This is where you're going to start to systematically take down an organization, steal all their intellectual property or what they consider sensitive for them to generate revenue, right? Because all a company cares about is generating revenue. So learning the infrastructure, learning the network, how it works, where their systems are at, where they want to protect all of their information, and taking that and stealing it. Or turning it into something different, so brand destruction, those different types of things. Reporting is the most important one out of all of them. That is how you convey your message to your customers. So for me, you know, in my company, my customers is the people that will ultimately be able to understand what a penetration test is. Not everybody knows anything about security. You know, I look at the different groups that I have to deal with on a regular basis. So I look at the development team. I look at, you know, the sales department. I look at the different organizational units that a business normally has. And I don't understand what they do. You know, I don't understand what HR does on a regular basis. I don't know what laws that I have to abide to for HR regulations or discrimination or those different types of things. As a developer, I have no idea what they're coding. Well, let me rephrase that. I know what they're coding. But as a developer, I don't know their day-to-day operations, how they're doing it. I don't know anything about them. Same thing goes for us in security. They have no idea what we do in security. They have no clue. So we're really trying to convey our message on reporting and figuring out what that message is going to be so that they can understand it, why it's important, and really going to focusing on what will hit the bottom line. And really, again, it's an emphasis on education. Education is critical and key. That's the biggest problem we have, and it's the biggest problem that I have. You know, I have the unique opportunity of being both technical and talking to our CFO. It's unique. And I have to be able to convey my message from the technical side into a way that he can understand in financials, because that's how he's geared and brained, right? Or if I'm talking to a project manager, how does that project manager, you know, relay information or take information in? Really, it's about understanding. So understand that there is no silver bullet and that we are all about the hack, at least at this point. Again, this presentation, I showed some breaking. I was showing you the other day. But this presentation was designed about fixing the problems we face in security. Again, I'm the person that likes to go in and break things and just take domain admin and do all those fun things that we like to do as a pen tester. We have to take a step back and get away from just being domain admin. The blame is on many. It's not just penetration testers. It's companies who want that check mark that don't want to take the time to understand security. As a consultant, I ran into those every day. They don't care. They don't care if they're going to be breached. They don't think it'll ever happen. And it's up to us to try to educate that, right? It's the high-level, big-picture companies that couldn't secure an organization, let alone themselves, that is the blame. This doesn't solve it. This doesn't solve it. And by that, I mean products, right? DLP, shiny solution isn't going to fix it. But coming together will. We're all smart. We're all equals here. I'm not any better than anybody else. Just because I can code something in set doesn't make me in any way, shape, or form smarter than anybody here. Everybody has their own individual expertise that they shine at, and coming together as an industry will definitely help. One thing I have to say is support P-Tests. Preach P-Tests and contribute to it. I mean, we're looking for contributors. Bring your knowledge to us. I mean, it's all about coming together, community, fixing the problems that we see as an industry. That's all it was designed to do. And again, there's a lot more to penetration testing. I'm not naive to think that this is the only thing that we need to fix in the security community. All right? It's just a big focus of mine. I mean, maturing information security programs like your application security team or, you know, different types of infrastructure needs that your organization has, all of those play into a robust information security program. Pen testing is just a sliver of that. But penetration testing has to change in order for this to start. We really have to go away or get back to the basics. Stay away from the shiny toys that the VARs are going to sell you. No offense to VARs, but the shiny toys that you sell you aren't going to necessarily help you if you don't know how to use it. Stay away from that magic bullet. I remember when... WikiLeaks came out. Did anybody here get a call from a data loss prevention company trying to sell you a DLP solution because it's going to fix the WikiLeaks breach? I got like 40 of them, man. In fact, it was interesting. I got it like 5 minutes after it was reported on like the news. Like, man, they have guys just sitting there monitoring the news and figuring out how they can sell that product. Think about what you're doing and why you need to build it from the ground up. And think about the big picture. Penetration testing aside, look at what makes your company money and secure that period. Again, let's fix this. To think that we need to think differently than the way we're doing it now. We need to work together. But I do have to say, I actually have the silver bullet to fix security. We need more hugs. Free hugs. No, I'm actually not done yet. So, sorry. That was a social engineer right there. I made it think that we're done, and then I kept going. No. To wrap things up, if I'm wrong on this, then let's prove it. Can you stop me? Can your company stop me? I'll take a bet. I'm not a consultant or anything, so you're gonna have to figure out the legal logistics to it. But I'll try breaking into any company. Just one. I'm not gonna do a whole bunch. But can you stop me? Can you detect me? Let's see if your information security program is working. I'll take that challenge. Can you stop this? Here's a zero day that I've been working on for the past, I don't know, a month or two. And this one right here is affecting a Microsoft service. And it's a zero day. And it's something that I just started researching. And it bypasses ASLR, and it bypasses data execution prevention, and all the other nifty little things that we do out there, and antivirus, and HIPS, and, you know, all that good stuff. And this one takes a little bit longer to work because I'm leveraging an egg hunter technique, which sits there and sifts through my memory looking for my payload. I ran into a little bit of constraint. But here's exploiting a Windows 7 fully patched system right here. Can you stop that? Let's pop a box. Now I'm done. Anybody have any questions? Thanks. Thanks. What's the best way to contribute to PTest? You can either contact myself or you can contact Chris Nickerson, and we'll get you started on the different areas that we're looking for help on. For right now, if you looked at the standard itself, it's pentest-standard.org. There's a mind map out there that all of us kind of came together and made just a flow of how we think a penetration test should go. And we're actually putting meat and potatoes into all that right now. So the different steps of a penetration test are going to go into there. And so there's going to be, you know, a difference between the standard and guidelines and those different types of things, but the standard itself will be a generalized version of what you should actually do on a penetration test. So if you're interested in contributing to it, again, we're looking for anybody who possibly can. Just contact us. Absolutely.
How is the penetration execution standard different than the NIST Special Publication 853?
So NIST is really geared around. The NIST standard, we get that question all the time, especially in the LinkedIn group, and there's a LinkedIn group. The NIST standard really focuses on how you quantify and qualitatively take risk assessments, and penetration testing is an extremely small sliver of that overall standard. It's not a standard, the overall guidelines. So what the penetration testing execution standard, and why it's different, is we're establishing a standard for how penetration tests should be performed. NIST doesn't do that. NIST isn't a standard. It's just general guidelines that you should follow during certain instances in your organization and how to try to incorporate a penetration test into security. So two different things. NIST, the way I see NIST is NIST falls into PTest. You know, it's a component that if you want to leverage inside of PTest, then absolutely go for it. But right now there's no standard out there, at least in the United States, that even comes anywhere near close to creating a formalized standard for us as penetration testers. And it's just an evolution. Again, this is something that, you know, in the security industry, we're a very, very new industry. I mean, 20 years ago, you didn't have a CSO dedicated to a company. It's just a maturity model to get to it. Good question. Any other questions? Let's move away from this as our methodologies for how we're going to calculate risk within the organization, and let's get back to the basics. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.